CrowPod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anyone, but what is suitable for everybody is the great stuff from our friends at The Famous, iconic wear for bears. Go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Great stuff over there. And if you want to win some stuff from them, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes on this episode that you're listening to right now. We give away stuff from them every single month here on the CrowPod. So check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
To CrowPod Explains America, the series here where I blow my friend Colin's mind with some of the more ridiculous shit that that our country can give. And well, Colin, this week we went to sports, you know, because I guess ostensibly what we do here on the CrowPod is supposed to be a sports program, although results questionable. But we're going to look at franchise shifts and our obsession with moving our teams fucking anywhere and anywhere.
Yeah, so that's why I threw this one at you, Shane. Like, my father-in-law is a Browns fan, and he always talks about how he hates this guy whose name escapes me. And like, I was like, why the fuck
Art
did
Modell.
He move?
Art Modell
there
would be his name.
Thank you. And he was like, oh, and the Ravens. Fuck the Ravens. I was like, what's that got to do with? Fucking just, why? Why do you let it happen?
Well, Art Modell's name will come up twice in this. So he's... he got experience and decided to put it to practice again. No, we're going to come to that. You know, we try to do a little bit of news of the day here. And well, I think somehow actually the biggest news in the country is something, well, that we didn't just, well, no, I guess we did create ourselves, didn't we? Yeah. Yeah. Hurricane Ian, of course, smashed into Florida, which I think it's only the second hurricane since Andrew to make landfall in the the Florida Peninsula. I might have my numbers wrong, but it's not too often actually. It's been yeah. Lucky. Most of the really bad ones have hit the Gulf Coast over the past 15-20 years or so.
Sort of do my did I remember it happening in the news? And so I can't remember the last time Florida could really get hit, as you say.
I think it would have been 2016, I want to say, because I remember talking to my brother the day after my wedding. They were getting, you know, battering down the hatches, and it was right around this time, I think the first week of September. So yeah, that was it. Thankfully, I mean, it did end up missing the Tampa area proper, which would have been fucking horrific, because for anybody who's ever been to Tampa, you know, there's a giant, what was it, the Skyway Bridge or whatever the hell they call it, that sits at the front of the bay. And had you channeled all that water into that small area, it would have been catastrophic. I mean, it's bad enough with something like Fort Myers and Sarasota and some of the areas down the coast a little bit, but this could have been far, far, far worse than it was somehow.
It did, however, allow this actually like a little bit of levity. Someone posted a video on Twitter, that was yesterday, of a shark swimming its way up the street in Fort Myers.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck.
Yeah. I think the storm surge in Fort Myers ended up being about 7.5 feet. And, you know, you got to remember, all of Florida is basically at sea level. I think that the highest point in Florida is, it's called Britain Hill, but that's all of you, you know, that's all the way up by Alabama. And I think it's all 345 feet above sea level, but most of Florida lies within, you know, just a few feet of sea level. And so, I mean, obviously with the storm surge that you get, plus the 12 to 18 inches of rain that falls with these storms, I mean, this is part of the thing with climate change is how much bigger these hurricanes are, as we saw with like Katrina and obviously the flooding that Houston's experienced. They dump so much goddamn rain. Florida is, well, the water table is very high because it's right at sea level. And then the ground is basically, hey, let's go back to ancient coastlines and dead animals. Look at this. The whole bedrock of Florida is basically, you know, old seashells. So they don't really absorb water very well. And again, the ocean basically sits about 6 inches to a foot underneath the ground anywhere you're at. So it's, yeah, there's nowhere for the water to go except for back to the ocean. And it tends to take a little while to get there.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, a couple of those that really shook me were because you know, like tsunamis, you know that like the shoreline recedes back into the sea right before it hits.
Yep.
I'd kind of forgotten that sort of happens with hurricanes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And bits of the, you know, they had like huge swathes of seabed that were just lying bare. It's like, that's not normal.
No.
Like,
no. And anytime you see that, something awful is about to happen.
Pray whatever deity you pretend to believe in and hope.
Yeah. I haven't looked at, you know, when I was going to bed last night, it was somewhere around 2.5 million people were without power already, which of course is tragic. You know, Puerto Rico, I'm sure, probably still doesn't have power from what, like 2016 or whenever the hell that one went through. So
I mean, they just lost it again last
week. That's they finally kind of got it back and now it's all gone again. But you know, they're not a state, so fuck them. We don't have to worry about that. Trump can go there and throw paper towels at people. It'll be fine. That fixes everything. you know, if only he'd been able to trade it for Greenland, we wouldn't have to worry about it at all.
I know.
Well, you know, the other good news for people over there in the UK, one of our great exports, Arthur Laffer, his idea is to come back to, come back to prominence and to fruition, or trickle-down economics, supply-side economics, which, man, Liz Truss had a hell of a morning going around all the local BBC stations.
She said she was going to hit the ground on day one, and she's done that.
Yeah.
I just didn't think she was talking about the pound.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think hitting the ground in her case would be leaping out of an airplane without a parachute. Is about how well she's impacted the ground here. It's bad. You know, we kind of touched on Laffer in the student loans episode. If you missed that one, you can scroll back down and find that here on the Crow Pod. But you know, Laffer, of course, came up with the Laffer curve, which is, they call it that because it's so laughable in economic policy. You can literally draw it on a bar napkin and explain the whole thing, which is what Laffer did for Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld back in 1974. And, this got him to the upper echelons of society, in a place where once you're there, no matter how bad your ideas are and how easily disproven they are, you never can be removed again. And, you know, now the UK gets to suffer the same fate.
Yay. I mean, I've got some stuff that I've been putting off buying from the UK, so it's ideal for me.
I mean, on the plus side, the new fourth kit, which I think our buddy Ross McCann figured out is the 14th kit that Castor have released in 2.5 years, not counting goalie shirts. That'll be much cheaper for us to purchase if we so want to. So
if we desired to.
I'd
rather spend my money at the Famous.
I mean, I'm interested to see if they're if they're actually going to wear this one. I suppose they finally realize, oh shit, we have all these third kits with the wrong sponsor on them, and just sticking an iron on it doesn't really work too well. We better come up with another shirt. So yeah, here comes another colorway change, I guess.
Oh god,
fucking hell! Yeah, it's like just
NFL teams.
Oh like, man, no, it's to say, yeah. Well, yeah, because I think this week is the week they start rolling out the all the different change helmets and everything in the NFL. It's I don't know. I can't keep track of who wears
when
what.
When do they start bringing out the camouflage nonsense?
Don't we do that for Veterans Day? So that'll be the second week of November, right?
That shit is disgusting. That's some of the worst kits I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yep. Yeah. Thankfully, you know, I mean, Major League Baseball's over by then, so we don't have to tolerate it. The NBA doesn't even pretend to give a fuck about that kind of stuff. Of course, you know, the NFL, they're more than happy to accept checks from the U.S. military to do that kind of shit. So tax dollars hard at work right there. Arthur Laffer, you think, would be disgusted at such a display, but that's not the case. And I'll tell you what, you know, and Colin, for the listeners, if you want to know more about who this asshole is, I will put a link down in the show notes to my blog. It's a little explainer about, well, again, how you can fail upward your entire career in the points of high society that you can never be removed from again, that no matter what you say or do and how often it doesn't work, people just keep trying it over and over and over.
It's wild. Like, fucking how?
Yeah.
It's just so, right, no.
Yeah.
I'm fucking gonna lose it if I think about that.
Well, I'm going to try to blow your mind another way here. We're going to take a quick break and come back. We're going to talk about franchises moving, sports teams moving, something that, well, you know, if you're a fan of MK Dons or, I don't know, Livingston, I think is the other one you brought, you know, you've maybe seen it. It's happened a few times in the UK, but well, that not the way we do it here. So we're going to come right back with that. Welcome back to CrowPod Explains America here. As always, if you like what we do on the show, scroll down and hit that Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes. Gets you entered to win some great stuff from our friends over there at The Famous. We give away stuff every month. Of course, if you want to go buy stuff from them in the Sadcast store, as Colin said, all you got to do is visit thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Awesome stuff, and can't thank them enough for what they do. So, Colin, are you ready?
Not even a little bit, because I know I'm going to be absolutely furious by a lot of what you're going to say to me. But fuck it.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a few minutes here. Try to, well, I guess lay the groundwork for whatever else. And I got to think, we did have a few listeners chime in with questions. So hopefully this kind of answers some of them, and then... Well, whatever Colin comes up with after this is maybe we'll get to it all. I just wrote this from my head this morning, and so I'm sure it's not all inclusive, but
you know, it's hard write to be. A podcast from your head on this topic says so much about this topic.
Well, you know, let's get to it. I mean, franchise shifts are, you know, ubiquitous and almost, well, they're a wholly unique part of the American sports culture. I mean, like I said, you know, there's only a couple examples that you could think of in the UK.
So I had to Google it. And the only ones that, you know, Livingston from Meadowbank Thistle and MK Dons, and both of them are termed moves to new towns. It's like, don't fucking give me that shit. And like, the rest of it's all like, you know, like 18, 19, you know, like... Newton Heath to Man United.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But yeah, we don't have, you know, modern day stuff.
No, this is not an idea that sprung up just in the past few decades. I mean, the early days of, you know, what would eventually become Major League Baseball was filled with these things. I bet you didn't know Rockford actually had a Major League team in the original National Association back in 1871. Yes. The Forest City Ball Club of Rockford.
Hold up, 1871. Sorry, baseball's been going on for that long.
That's the nascent years of organized professional baseball, yeah. Yep.
Fuck.
Yeah, so Rockford had a Major League Baseball team before Rangers were founded.
Honestly, that has really blown my mind. I did not realize baseball was that old.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, to this, perhaps the most American of all American sports teams, the Yankees, of course, they began their time in the American League as the Baltimore Orioles, and the franchise was purchased with the purpose of moving them to New York and Hilltop Park in 1903 as the Highlanders. The new Baltimore Orioles played in the Independent International League, and honestly, they had some of the best baseball teams ever assembled during the 20s and 30s playing in this league before MLB's dominance was fully asserted over the minor league system that, you know, stays in place to this day. Probably the most famous franchise shifts in American sports took place in the same winter of 1957. The Giants and Dodgers both packed up and left New York for the left coast of sunny, at least in the Dodgers' case, sunny California. But they weren't even the first major league teams of the decade to move house. The Boston Braves kicked off. I mean, this is a wave of franchise shifts that has its own Wikipedia entry, folks. So you can go look this stuff just so for this
you're doing
era.
I'm doing that thing where you're saying, like, Boston Braves. I was like, no, that's not right. Atlanta Braves. Like,
no, it's not just Atlanta, though. I mean, this is, but the Boston Braves left after 81 years to go to Milwaukee. And as Colin just said, they'd move again to Atlanta in 1966. And then to, finally now they're in Cumberland, Georgia, which is a unincorporated exurb of Atlanta, solely created for them to get a new stadium in 2017. Don't worry though, Milwaukee, you know, with a team for a few years, won a world championship there with Henry Aaron and Eddie Matthews and Warren Spahn, but they wouldn't be without baseball for long. The Seattle Pilots would move there in 1970 after only one season.
That's a terrible name.
So what? One season, they pick up, move to Milwaukee. Now, don't worry about Seattle, folks, because my Seattle Mariners would join the American League along with the Toronto Blue Jays in the 1977 expansion. And the Baltimore Orioles are back because the St. Louis Browns became the only team of this original expansion and shift era to move from west to east in 1954. Now, Missourians clamoring for American League baseball, they wouldn't have to wait too long. The Philadelphia Athletics would depart for Kansas City the following year. And like the Braves, they weren't done because they would leave for Oakland in 1968, which is a city they've been trying to get out of for about 20 years now. And Colin, if you're worried about Kansas City, don't be, because the Royals would move in as part of Major League Baseball's 1969 expansion, along with the aforementioned Pilots, both in the American League. The San Diego Padres, not to be confused with the San Diego Padres of the Pacific Coast League, who moved to Eugene, Oregon after the 1968 season.
Go M's.
they moved there to accommodate the new National League member. They would join the Montreal Expos in that 69 expansion. The Expos, of course, now the Washington Nationals of the National League East. And they're not to be confused with charter American League member, the Washington Nationals, who started as the Washington Senators, were the Nationals for 50 years, and then the Senators again, and then moved to Minnesota to become the Twins after the 1960 season.
I fucking hate you.
Oh, get ready. Because the new Washington Senators begin playing in 1961 as part of the American League expansion that also added the Los Angeles Angels, who are now the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. But the new Senators would relocate to Arlington, Texas in 1972 as the Rangers. Moniker that they would one day have to defend by clarifying that despite sharing the name, they're not affiliated with the law enforcement agency and that they stand for equality by, quote, condemning racism, bigotry, and discrimination in all forms. That's what you want to have to do with your team name that you come up with there.
Fucking.
we're not even done yet, because this isn't only a baseball thing, right? The Chicago Cardinals, the original NFL team to play in Soldier Field. Of course, the Bears, who had moved from downstate Decatur, Illinois in 1921, shared Wrigley Field with the Cubs until 1970. But the Cardinals scooted down the brand new I-55 after the 1959 season for St. Louis. And they'd stay there until 1987, where, like so many people from the Midwest, they would eventually retire to Arizona. The Los Angeles Chargers moved to San Diego after one season in 1960, but that move wasn't permanent. The Dallas Texans, not the 1952 Dallas Texans who lasted for 1 year in the NFL, the 1960 AFL Dallas Texans, left for Kansas City in 1963 to become the Chiefs, another name with issues, you know, would come back up years later. Minneapolis, now having the Twins, meant it didn't need the Lakers anymore. So they moved to Los Angeles and have ridiculously kept their name ever since. The Philadelphia Warriors got a new owner and departed for San Francisco in 1962. The Chicago Zephyrs moved to Baltimore to become the Baltimore Bullets in 1963, and that would last for a whole decade before they moved to Washington, D.C. The Syracuse NBA team went to Philly to be the Sixers. The Royals, and not those Royals, left Cincinnati for Kansas City to become the Kings, which would last for 3 years before they moved to Sacramento. The Buffalo Braves became the San Diego Clippers. the New Orleans Jazz moved to Utah and have kept this ridiculous name ever since. Yeah.
Because there's nothing jazzy about Utah.
No, there's nothing black about Utah. No. Oh, yeah. And also the San Diego Clippers moved to Los Angeles. And, you know, I mean, for the hell of it, we even spread to the Canadian sport. The early days of the NHL saw three franchises relocate among a number that folded. And, of course, this was mostly owing to the Great Depression. But two clubs left Canada then for the U.S. in a trend that would resurface in the 1990s when the Nordiques and Winnipeg Jets flew south to mixed results. That followed a number of franchise shifts when the NHL rapidly grew after its initial 1967 expansion, which was followed by five franchise moves in a decade. Winnipeg, of course, got their team back with the Atlanta Thrashers left in 2011, but Quebec's still waiting for theirs. And then, of course, there's been this whole series of high-profile modern-era NFL moves. The Oakland Raiders, of course, went to Los Angeles in 1982. The Baltimore Colts, Art Modell, moved in the middle of the night to Indianapolis in 1984. The Cardinals, leaving for Phoenix, eventually saw the Los Angeles Rams via Cleveland originally move to St. Louis. The Los Angeles Raiders moved to Oakland. The Houston Oilers moved to Memphis for a year before settling in Nashville as the Tennessee Titans. The Cleveland Browns left for Baltimore in a move reminiscent of the Colts, Art Modell, yet again. The NFL, feeling like they hadn't quite stuck it to Cleveland enough, made a new Cleveland Browns that joined the Houston Texans, not the Dallas Texans, in the 2002 expansion. The St. Louis Rams moved to Los Angeles to join the Chargers in Inglewood at the Stan Kroenke We Built This with Walmart Money ground. And the Oakland Raiders moved to Las Vegas. And of course, Colin, the underlying theme in all this is money, the promise of new stadiums or economic windfall for ownership groups who, I mean, definitely in modern times, only see their investments improve year after year. And this is all created by a situation that baseball wrought on American sport, the evolution of the franchise system, which ingrained the single entity framework for our sports leagues, that would lead to the inevitable outcome of Major League Soccer, which is little more than a giant tax avoidance scheme for the owners of teams in the other big four sports leagues. That's most of it. And I know I still miss some, folks. And like I said, I wrote that off my head this morning after I went down the street to grab a cup of coffee from the gas station.
You know the scene in It's Always Sunny where Charlie's like explaining in front of the giant board? In my head, that's what you were doing there. I mean, it's wild that it just happened. Like, you know, because it is all for money. But a really good friend of mine is a big was a big Chargers fan.
Yeah.
Giant, like, monster of a man. Huge. Came up from San Diego. Has Chargers on his knuckles.
Nice.
And we were talking about it. That was actually why it kind of came in my head. We're talking about, and he was like, I was like, why? What the fuck happened? Why? And I was like, and do you still support them? He was like, no, fuck them. Yeah. Fuck them and fuck, I can't remember the owner.
Oh, that's shit, I forget his name. Not Kroenke's the Rams. It's some other fucker.
But like, he was explaining, the whole reason they moved is because he wanted a new stadium.
Yep.
And San Diego wouldn't pay for it. And like, they put it on a ballot and still, like, he was like, you know, and it's a bit, the Chargers were a big thing for us. Yep. They were still like, no, we're not paying more taxes to you. Fuck you. And he was like, well, I'm going then.
Yeah.
It's like, I think for the Scottish perspective, I can't imagine, you know, like, I mean, I can't imagine, like, you know, any of the SPL. Like doing it really, but you know, like, you imagine like Hamilton, like, all right, we're not Hamilton Academical anymore, we're Nairn Academical. It just, like, why do people still support these teams?
it's one of these things that makes it easier for me to kind of people, fuck, even now, after however long I've been doing this and however long I've been in the forums and everything else, I did that show with Andy and Rob on Heart and Hand last week, where, you know, why do you support Rangers? I mean, one, it's a family thing, but two, I mean, growing up in American sports culture, it's easy because you never know when your team could leave. I mean, the Mariners were going to move to Tampa, or the White Sox were going to move to Tampa, and then the Mariners maybe to Chicago in the early 90s until they finally got a stadium deal done for Safeco, now T-Mobile Park. Actually, it's kind of funny. Chicago is the only pre-expansion era Major League Baseball team with like its two original franchises. Everyone else is, you know, because like New York got the Mets in 1962. Obviously, Baltimore lost the Yankees and gained the Orioles, you know, the Orioles in the 50s. Philadelphia never got an American League club back. They just have the Phillies now. So, but Chicago is the only one from the pre-expansion era, from that pre-first shift era, that still has its two original teams.
I suppose I think I'm looking at it from a different perspective. Like, I'm looking at the perspective of, like, my club will never leave, but, you know, something catastrophic has to happen for that. Whereas from an American perspective, like, this team may only be here for 10 years.
Yeah. Or three stays. Or one. I mean, that's the whole reason. I mean, the Mariners came into being because the Pilots it was the Pilots in Kansas City that came in that same, the Royals again, because the Athletics had moved to Oakland and left Kansas City. But the Pilots came in and they couldn't get a stadium deal done. And that was when Bud Selig, who would become commissioner of Major League Baseball, he moved them to Milwaukee after, again, one season in Sixth Field. And then Seattle got together and built the Kingdome for the 1977 season, which also saw the Seattle Seahawks play there. And of course, well, Seattle, not done with franchises. You know, the Supersonics famously left for Oklahoma City and are now likely coming back as the Supersonics. You know, I mean, you got to look at the number of these teams too. They're either immediately replaced in their markets or however. I mean, like, look at the two NFL teams I talked about there. The last expansion in the NFL, the Browns replaced the Browns, and the Houston Texans replaced the Oilers, who had just left 5 years prior.
Yeah. I mean, that does make sense that way. Like, how does... This is probably a very simple question, but, like, I'm an owner.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I'm like, how do I decide that, like, I'm taking a team to Houston? Like, how does that work?
Well, you know what? That kind of brings us to the last point in this. And let's grab one more break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to try to explain why that happens in the first place. And then, yeah, how those decisions are made. So right back after this. Yes, we're moving. All right, back in for the last part of Crowpot Explains America here. And again, of course, scroll down, hit the Buy Me Coffee link in the show notes. You can win some stuff from the famous. Colin, you wanted to know, well, how owners go about making these choices. But yeah. I mean, the first part is the why. And I mentioned it there at the end. It's this thing that got ingrained in American sport by Major League Baseball. And this all stems from, well, you know, the National League came first, right? And the American League was formed in 1901, challenged the supremacy of the National League, brought players over with, you know, better contracts, more money. And in 1903, effectively, they came to an agreement to form what we now know as Major League Baseball, right? The National League and American League. But in the teens, there was the Federal League, which kind of did the same thing. And again, started up in these cities that Wrigley Field was not built for the Cubs. It was built for the Chicago Whales of the Federal League.
And, how many whales are in Chicago?
Yeah, I know. It's a great, I'll tell you what though, it is a fucking cracking hat. Like, if you guys want a good ball cap, there's I forget the name of the company. There's one out there that does like old school ball caps. It's a sea with a little whale. I mean, it's pretty good. But the Federal League had challenged the supremacy of Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball, you know, squashed it. It only lasted two seasons because the owners were obviously fighting uphill. And if you're just throwing money at players without generating revenue, it goes away pretty quick. So the Federal League folded back in, and a lot of players got blackballed, you know, or blacklisted from Major League Baseball as a result. The good ones came back, the really good ones came back, but some never played organized baseball in America again. They'd have to go down to Mexico to play. But following that, there was a lawsuit brought that, well, people talk about baseball's antitrust exemption all the time. I'm sure you've heard this come up in news. It came up around, you know, steroid investigations that the Congress was going to look at stripping Major League Baseball's antitrust exemption. But it effectively created, again, the single entity model, because franchises, well, I mean, they are. That's what they are. They're not clubs. You know, they get the San Diego Padres Baseball Club or whatever, and obviously we refer to them as clubs, you know, in just a common sense. But they're all franchises of a single entity. The league owns all of them, effectively, right? They all have their own owners that own the stadiums and own the trademarks and broadcast rights and all that kind of shit. But it's all in all four of the big leagues and MLS. It's all pooled together under one umbrella. MLS is like the worst example of how this system works, in that it took all of these horrible functioning ideas of how American sport does and just pooled it into one thing. Like, players don't have contracts with their clubs in MLS. They have contracts with MLS. You know, I mean, it runs everything. And the way that, you know, money's dispersed, like, say Philadelphia Union sell a player to the Atletico, right? Philadelphia Union get a percentage of that transfer fee. The rest goes into like a central pool for the whole league. Which again is how, well, you know, we have like Neil Doncaster in the SPFL, but he's a CEO, right? We have commissioners in these leagues that work for the owners, which is why you have labor strife, you know, lockouts or strikes or whatever the hell they are, because you have a central head that, again, works at behest of the owners, not for the game. And so, I mean, that's the why. The how, I mean, effectively anymore, it's what town is going to give you the most money to build a shiny new stadium. Very, very few teams have spent their own money in the past, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 fucking years to build their own stadiums. Of course, the Braves got the Olympic Stadium off the back of the 96 Olympics, converted that into baseball. And then when that wasn't good enough, moved to, again, a town that they basically created outside of Atlanta for the purpose of building a new ballpark. The Bears right now are looking to move to Arlington Heights outside of the city because Soldier Field is not, I mean, Soldier Field is a perfectly wonderful stadium. And again, in a world like throughout the rest of the world, clubs either learn how to use their stadiums because they own them, or if you're rich enough, like Madrid or what, you know, you do whatever the hell you want. The bare solution is to move to a 326 acre parcel of land outside of the city, because they're going to be able to get a shit ton of money from Arlington Heights or other tax breaks and whatever else to build their new ground. Honestly, the only one of real recent memory, or the most prominent one, at least of recent memory, who built their, I mean, obviously the Yankees built their new Yankee Stadium because the Yankees just print money.
Well, yes. Again, Real Madrid.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's ridiculous. There's nothing that they can do to not be more valuable after, you know, the year after next. But the San Francisco Giants did build their own stadium, which kind of fucked it for a lot of the other owners, because then cities and towns and states went, oh, wait a second, those rich fuckers did it. Why can't you?
I mean, like, from a capitalist point of view, I totally understand it. Like, from a locality, like, you know, you look at the Bears, like, how much more revenue is going to be brought to that town, like, by the Bears? Is that ever going to outweigh how much money is going to be spent on building these millionaires?
No. I mean, it never works for the cities. It never does. And yet, you know, over and over again, they continue. Oh, fuck. You know, like Buffalo and New York were fighting with the Bills over $1 billion for a new stadium. It's like, again, these people are filthy fucking rich. Stan Kroenke couldn't get what he wanted in St. Louis, so him and his wife, again, with Walmart money, bought a piece of ground in Inglewood that was condemned in an horse racetrack, and turned it into this NFL stadium, moved his team there, and got the Chargers to come along with it. And the thing, you know, you don't have to have that local ingrained flavor in these leagues because, again, all the money flows into one central place and then is redispersed throughout everyone. So your buddy there that was a Chargers fan in San Diego, they don't give a fuck because the money all flows up to the NFL and then comes back out to all the franchises, right? Yes, yeah. They make their own money from parking. They make their own money off of, you know, their local broadcasting rights and stuff like that. But even like merchandising, I think it's 80% of the money goes up to a central pool and then comes back out.
Yeah, so that's one of the, one of the things I always find quite cool, and I suppose that's why, is that you can go to like NFLstore.com and it has everything. And like, you know, if you're like, oh, that's a really cool hoodie that, you know, like my buddy's a Steelers fan, so that's a really cool hoodie you've got. I can then go, oh, I can go get in a Patriots version, and it's the exact same hoodie, but it's just a different team colors.
Yep.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, by and large, it works great. I mean, you know, you get, I don't know. You know, the problem is if you have a dud year, you know, like if we have 2.5 years of Castor, right, that haven't been great, you can have an entire league tied down for, you know, 5 years on a uniform contract that doesn't work. And then, of course, you get the problem where, I mean, anymore, there's only 2 or 3 companies in the world that can service this kind of stuff. This is why, of course, you know, Major League Baseball uniforms for years were made by, Russell and then Majestic. Now it's Nike, you know, because Nike is Nike. I mean, it works. It can work to the detriment of fans, but overall, I mean, just look at the popularity of American sport, right? You know, the NFL travels overseas. Major League Baseball is going to go play in London.
Right? My first NFL game, in fact, my only NFL game to date, was in London.
Yeah.
I saw the Lions get absolutely roasted by the Chiefs.
Yeah. Well, the Jacksonville Jaguars will certainly end up relocating to London at some point. But whenever it can be done, it will be done. Yeah. I mean, they're already playing fucking half their games there anyway, so it doesn't matter.
It makes me feel less. Like, I know that Scott likes football, is our football. Scottish football is still more commercialised than it ever has been, but it still doesn't feel like it still feels like there's a bit of a sporting soul in these clubs.
Right.
Whereas, I'm from Edinburgh, and I'm a Patriots fan, and I live in the West Coast of America. That doesn't make sense, really.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter here.
No. Well, and that's, you know, like, I mean, I'm a Mariners fan because I went to a Mariners game at Comiskey Park when I was a kid. My brothers were Cubs fans, and I didn't want to be a Cubs fan, you know. Yeah. Bad choice on my part, you know. This is why you don't let four-year-olds make decisions on important life choices like what sports teams love. But here I am, still 21 years out from watching the Mariners play a playoff game. So that's hasn't worked out. No, but, I mean, it's part of the thing, you know. For years, you had Cubs fans all over the West, you know, the mountain states and all the way out to California, because you had WGN radio. And at night, not at night because Cubs didn't play at night for home games, but certainly away games, you could pick up the broadcast out there. The Cardinals were the same way. It was that KMOX, I think, out of St. Louis, broadcast all the way out there. So that's why, you know, in Arizona, there's more Cubs and Cardinals fans in Arizona than there will ever be Arizona Diamondbacks fans, and there's more Yankees fans almost anywhere than there'll ever be anything else, because they are, you know, as you said, they're fucking Real Madrid, right? They're United and Liverpool rolled into fucking one.
I don't know. I've learned a lot today. I don't feel like, there was a large portion where I felt my head was going to explode. The baseball stuff kind of does make more sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, like I said, you know, once you understand how our sports leagues came about and the model, because, I mean, baseball was first and everything's modeled on it. And, you know, it's no coincidence that the NFL started right after the Major League Baseball court case there, right around the end of World War One. You know, the NHL started right after that. The NBA took a few more years, but they're all modeled on the same principle. Again, it's the league runs everything, and the franchises are, you know, they're fucking McDonald's, you know, and like I said, the MLS is the worst case of it. I mean, MLS, every MLS team feels like, again, walking into a McDonald's. They're all the exact same.
Tried. So Timbers are our local team.
Which is, look, if you go back again, scroll down here, because we did a show on that, the Rangers going to Portland Timbers in 1976. They're one of the few teams that's held on to some kind of local identity. Now, you're seeing the issues again with the central ownership thing now, that they have an owner who's a sex pest or tolerates sex pests, and you can't do anything about it, which is driving fans away at a rapid rate. But yeah, Portland is an example, an outlier, I think.
But yeah, one of the things we've been to more Thorns games, which is the women's team.
Yep.
Because that does just feel a little bit more community focused.
It's more organic, I think.
Yeah. And also, like, they don't play in green.
Yes. Yeah, there is that problem with the Timbers. But, well, I mean, fuck, take the Fire, for example, right? I mean, these moves don't have to happen moving from cities or moving across the country or anything like that. The Chicago Fire started playing at Soldier Field, won MLS in their first season, won 3 U.S. Open Cups very early on. And then while Soldier Field was being renovated, moved to North Central College in Naperville, which is where I saw Carlos Bocanegra play for the first time. Then moved to Bridgeview, which is outside of it is 70 blocks south and 70 blocks west of the Loop. It has no public transport access, nothing like that. Which, yeah, I mean, this all kind of comes back to something that we've been talking about in Scottish football over the past week with the television contract is the lack of care for the fans. Because, again, the way American sports are structured, the individual fan doesn't matter, right? If you lose one in Chicago, it doesn't matter because all the money comes in centrally. And there was the chief, I think, the guy was talking about the Wrexham deal that me and Peter were discussing on the show earlier this week. He's the biggest challenge to pro sports is not, you know, anything with television deals or as far as getting people into the ground, you know, because of course Dave Cormack was saying that the Aberdeen chairman was saying, look, if we broadcast these games, people don't show up, which is bullshit. The biggest challenge to getting people in seats is not whether the games are on TV, it's public transport. And obviously in America, that's not something that we do well at all. And the Fire were a perfect example of that. When they built the stadium in Bridgeview, there was no public transit. There's no train line. You would take the train to Midway Airport and then a bus down Harlem Avenue to go to Bridgeview. And so after however many years that they were there, again, they packed up and moved back to Soldier Field, which has been a train wreck because Soldier Field has the worst pitch in American sports by far. And now they've been forced into playing games back in Bridgeview again this season, a city that they left on its ass and so far underwater on that stadium that it effectively bankrupted the village.
Yeah, I think the public transport thing you really hit your head. Because I grew up just outside Edinburgh, lived in Edinburgh, and I would get, you know, for an Old Firm game, you know, I'd be up, I'd get bussed down to the train station through to Glasgow, then I'd get the subway to the stadium. Whereas if I was in America, I'd be like, well, I guess I'm driving then.
Yeah.
And paying $30 for parking.
Exactly. I mean, it's part of the decision making process that we have out here. You know, Rockford, there is no. Hopefully, we're eventually getting a train line back to Chicago here fairly soon. But even that's going to be relatively expensive. And you know, once we get in there, we're going to have to change off of the, what are effectively Amtrak lines on the local, you know, Chicago CTA lines. But me and my buddy Brad, who I go to ball games with, you know, all throughout the year, the choice is always, do we drive into Wrigley or Comiskey, which we did both this year, or do we go to Milwaukee, which is in another state, but since we're going to have to drive anyway, it's easier to get in and out of Miller Park and get up there, which we also did this year. I mean, we hit all three at least once this season. So because of the lack of public transport, it's brutal. You know, it, with few exceptions, obviously the Yankees being where they are in the Bronx, I mean, they built the new stadium right across the street effectively from the old one. So obviously all the extant public transport lines that service Yankee Stadium were there. But, you know, like Atlanta, again, they took, you know, the ball club, since it moved to Atlanta, the original Atlanta Stadium was just south of downtown. The Olympic Stadium was built adjacent to that. In fact, the parking lot for the Olympic Stadium, which, again, this is something that happens often in American sports, the parking lot in the Olympic Stadium was the footprint of the old stadium. The new Comiskey Park here in Chicago, the parking lot is the old Comiskey Park.
I saw a time-lapse video of that this week, just coincidentally.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, like every 6 months as the one stadium grew.
Yep.
And then the other one disappeared.
Yeah. Well, fuck, I mean, Cincinnati, when they built their new stadiums for the Browns and the Reds, it was actually part of, was it like right center field that, you know, the Riverfront Stadium was still there as they're trying to finish and build the new, or left center field. It was left center field. It was right field lines up with the Ohio River. But left center field, where the old stadium was still, you know, it was still there. And it was part of effectively the wall, the exterior wall of the new ballpark. So again, I mean, that's part of the thing too. You know, the insistence, look, Fenway Park and Wrigley Field are so revered because there aren't any of those. We don't keep stadiums here. They're disposable.
Yeah. I've been to Fenway, and Fenway is horribly uncomfortable. Horribly uncomfortable. It's an awful stadium, but I understand it. Like, I do get, if that was like, you imagine taking Ibrox away.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, Wrigley Field was fucking terrible. I couldn't say, Wrigley Field was a piss-reeking fucking hellhole for years until the Ricks came in, or the Hicks, sorry, spent a shit ton of money. Now, see, they went through, they tried to get the city to spend on it, and the city kept saying no. And again, if you tell billionaires no, they'll just do it themselves. And that's what they did. But, you know, they've made Wrigley Field, I actually enjoy Wrigley Field again. It's strange after so many years of my life just absolutely dreading having to go in there to actually be like, man, this is kind of nice now. I'm enjoying myself. Yeah. Colin, that's the franchise shifts and everything else. Like I said, folks, there is a ton of reading on this. If you got questions, you hit me up. This show, too, is not only going out on the CrowPod Network, but it's going to be going out on Heart and Hand. So if that's where you're listening to this on Sunday, if you like this kind of stuff, we do more of these shows all the time. You just got to get them off of the CrowPod. And all you got to do is type in CrowPod wherever you get your podcasts and add it. And you get more stuff like this all the time. You don't just get me and David and Todd bitching about being middle-aged men. You get stuff like this, or me and Peter Ewart talking about the television deal or whatever the hell else goes out there. So again, like I said, if you did like this, just look for the CrowPod wherever you get your podcasts, and you get more stuff like this all the time. So, Colin, hopefully you understand a little bit more about America after these 45 minutes that we've spent here.
As always, Shane, my understanding and infuriation, I don't even think that's a word, at this country has expanded again.
Yeah, they kind of grow level with each other, don't they? I think.
Yeah.
It's the Laffer curve of America.
All right, buddy.
All right. Colin, of course, you can find on Twitter at Don't Talk Col. If you want to find him, you can scroll down in the show notes here. Yeah, I've always got him tagged there. So, Colin, thank you, buddy.
Pleasure as always, my friend. Take
absolutely.
You guys.
And we'll be back with another episode here in a couple weeks. More CrowPod Explains America. We'll talk to you soon.
Some people call me the space cowboy.